This is Sarah Reith with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll hear from Renee Vineyard, a physician's assistant who now lives in Ukiah. She was working in the fisheries in Alaska before she came to Mendocino County with a man in 1976.
And ended up staying in Navarro. We lived in a homemade camper built on the back of a flatbed truck. It was pretty cool. There was a tree farm in Navarro, and we would take these pallets of trees and go up in the woods and plant trees. They were plugs, and we'd just use a hodad, and we'd make a little hole, pull it back, take a plug, put the plug in, put the... I wasn't real good at it. I'm not made for running up and down hills in the woods. I loved it, but I really wasn't very good at it. We got paid by the plug, and I don't think I made a lot of money. Then after that season, we moved up on Brad Wiley's property in Navarro, and my boyfriend worked in his vineyard, and I helped in the vineyard. We lived in the camper, built an outhouse, pretty basic, had a nice garden, a lot of time outdoors. Ultimately, I met Diane Padgett, who did home births, and I had been to several home births. I lived in Oregon before I went up to Alaska, and I was drawn to this, and just the back to the land, to the home births, you know, taking your care into your own hands. And so I started attending home births with her, and then spread out through a couple of years, and then I was attending my own, I called them clients, never patients, you know, their births, and working with the medical staff on the coast, having some backup, and it was quite nice. And because we lived in a camper up on land without electricity and such, we had a CB radio. And so what people would do when they needed to contact me at night is they'd call the old Floodgate store. And Butch Paula owned it at the time, and he and his wife would radio up to me, to my CB at night. And the same with Diane. She was mountain midwife, and I was mother's helper. I mean, it's fun to think about these days. You know, and you go off, and you sit with someone through their labor, be up in someone's upstairs with the other midwife and just talking and hanging out and waiting for the babies. And it was quite good. And I had a lot of support when I decided to go to physician assistant school from Mark Apfel at the clinic. I got to come in and see patients with him and get the hours I needed to qualify for the program.
You know, talking to a lot of people who are really serious about the natural birth movement, I've gotten the impression that there's sort of a reaction against the more established Western medical practice, but it sounds like you had integrated Western style nursing and more traditional midwifing and natural birth. Did you feel like there was a dichotomy there, or did you feel like that you were able to kind of seamlessly move back and forth between the two different approaches?
I think in the beginning, I was really down on the medical community, or just thinking that they were taking too much control and too many C-sections, blah, 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 that kind of thing. And, you know, as I got older, I realized there is a way to integrate this and have respect for both. You know, like I said, I had a lot of support from Mark Apfel when I decided to go off to PA school. And I was attending classes in Santa Cruz, where there was a big home birth movement, doing a lot of reading, educating myself. I loved being at home births. And there were some that were didn't go exactly like planned or whatever, and we ended up in the hospital, but that was okay too. I felt like we were we were really attuned to what was happening with the mom and babies. And
what was your most memorable birth, if you can tell the story without giving away anybody's super personal medical details?
Yeah, I'll, this is a crazy story. Mary Ellen Black was a physician on the coast, did home births and hospital, and she called me one day and she said, there's a young woman alone going to have a home or a hospital birth in Boonville. I think she's in labor, but I'm not sure. Would you mind going to Boonville and checking her? So I go to Boonville. I wasn't in a hurry because it was sounded like it was maybe false. And when I got there, this woman is in full-on labor. And I called Mary Ellen and I said, Mary Ellen, this baby's going to be born here or in the car. And she says, I'm on my way. And so I got everything ready, but I had just been to a birth a few days before. So I didn't have everything, but I had enough. And she had two friends there. So, you know, the labor's going along nice in the bedroom, and I ask her friend, I don't know if I should use his name, but I'll use Virgil as a name. And I said, would you go warm up some oil on the stove and some hot water? And he went in and put the oil in a pan on a electric burner on high. Well, it caught fire. And then he put it under the sink and to put it out, and it spewed up and caught the curtains on fire. So I'm in the bedroom with this laboring woman, and I see the reflection of flames on the wall. And I told Virgil's wife, call 911. Virgil, go put your hand under cold water, you know. And that night at the fire department in Boonville, they were having a meeting. And so not only a few people came, but like the whole fire department came to the house. And we were right behind the fire department, so it didn't take long. So I'm in the bedroom and telling this woman to blow, don't push, you know, let's delay this a little bit. And her labor completely stopped. In nature, if an animal is in danger, their labors will stop until the danger passes. So anyway, this woman goes off with her husband in an ambulance to get the burns checked. I have all these people in the living room that are fire people. They put the fire out. And I asked one of the older women to come in with me till Mary Ellen got there, you know. And so her labor started back up. Baby sounded healthy. And Mary Ellen gets there and she's pushing this baby out. And all of a sudden the baby, its head turned dusky. And there was a tight cord, and it was pretty scary there for a bit, but we got the cord. I was delivering the baby and got the cord cut and unwound, and we got her up, you know, holding her up and pushed that baby and just, you know, pushed that baby hard. And the baby was born. The baby was very dusky. She pinked up pretty fast, which is what you want. And it turned out okay, but the reality was, you know, if it hadn't, I didn't have forceps with me, and if Mary Ellen hadn't got there, I would not have had an easy way to cut that cord, and not forceps, but clips. Anyway, baby turned out fine, and 20 years later, I was out of the area. I moved back to the area. The doctor I was working with put a picture in the newspaper that I was joining the practice. And I got a letter from her mother, the baby's mother, inviting me to her graduation from nursing school. You know, I was like, wow. Anyway, that's probably one of my most memorable, but it wasn't, you know, one that I had planned.
How did a more typical experience go? It sounds like you would need a lot of advance notice to get way out into the woods to deal with these situations. Did you ever get there too late?
No, I never got there too late. I don't remember missing a birth. And probably because I would go early, you know, and to check people. And if it seemed like it was going to happen, then I would stay. Or my partner would stay. I always had a partner in midwifery. You know, through the prenatal care, you get to know the family and be more comfortable with them and do home visits. And so I never missed a birth. Yeah.
Was there a connection between the natural birth movement and the rest of the Back to the Land movement?
Oh, I feel there was. Yeah, you know, these were people usually that had gardens, that, you know, had, you know, a lot of respect for nature and natural living. I think it was part of that movement during that time. I know people still do home births, but I don't hear about it as much.
What were some of the other aspects of your life that you would consider as being back to the land experiences?
For me, it was gardening. I really learned to garden, and it was very important. It was a focus in my life. Living without electricity, hauling water.
Where did you get your water?
Oh, this is so funny. We had a big tank that was on the back of a truck, and sometimes, this wasn't very frequent, but we'd go down to Gowan's and fill up at night from their spigot, you know, back by the bathrooms. You know, we got water out at Rancho Navarro, not Rancho Navarro, but where the tree farm used to be, and haul it up the hill. Later, Brad Wiley built a house up there, and there was water more available.
What were your interactions like with the community members who had been here for generations? Did there seem to be hostility, or was there a pretty easy integration?
Wow, that's a good question. For me, I don't ever remember feeling hostility. But, you know, you'd hear about things, you know, that people that had logging background weren't that happy with all the hippies moving in.
What about the community of other Back to the Landers? It sounds like a whole community just kind of happened. What was that experience like for you?
I think it did happen. I think it happened a little before I got there. You know, I came in 76, the end of 76, and a lot of people had already started, you know, communes, like up at Rainbow, up on Greenwood Ridge. There's the old one, Compost College. I think it was outside of Boonville. I never was involved with that at all. So I was a little bit late getting there, but it was where my head was. That's where I wanted to be. I had done a little bit of Back to the Land in Southern Oregon, in Tacoma, Oregon, prior to going to Alaska, prior to coming to Navarro. So, you know, I tend to gravitate to people who were similar and had similar interests. I got to know a lot of the Hispanic community through home births because they liked home births. I knew some Spanish, but definitely used interpretation. Diane Padgett, the early midwife that I worked with, she spoke Spanish. That was a great experience working with a different culture.
Making a abrupt segue from humans to animals, did you ever have any encounters with wildlife that were especially memorable?
Oh, up in the vineyard, I just remember hearing, you know, the last cry of some animal getting eaten in the vineyard, or owls at night. We built a pond and went down to another pond, and one night on a full moon night, and harvested bullfrogs. That was kind of interesting. Brought them over to our pond, and of course they're all vying for territory, so they were, I remember, for it seemed like 2 weeks, they were so loud at night.
Why did you want bullfrogs?
Just to help the pond along, you know, keep it clean, keep it bug population down, and they just seem to be a good part of the ecosystem of a pond.
When you said you were harvesting them, I thought that you were going to say that you were going to eat their legs or something.
I know. That's probably not the right term.
Do you remember any special gatherings or rituals or things that became regular events, like New Year's parties or solstice parties or anything that was especially memorable?
We would go to the coast and get mussels and have a campfire, have the big vats, have the butter with garlic, you know, and just have a feast. And that, when it was season, that happened a lot. And it was all outdoors. That was wonderful. I remember that. And Haven't done that in 30 years. That was pretty cool.
Is there a particular memory that's especially emblematic for you when someone says back to the land or the 1970s? Is there anything that just springs to mind for you and is like, yeah, that's the memory?
Oh, I think of myself out in the garden with my boyfriend, you know, both of us working topless, long hair, long skirt, you know, friends coming up the hill. That's fine if I didn't have my top on. just looser. Not crazy, but it just was a lot more accepting, easy. I think of, just working out outside. I wasn't too involved in growing marijuana. That started coming in during that time. Gosh, spending a lot of time swimming in the pond. You know, there was nothing out there. And people would come up, or friends would come, or I would just go down by myself and swim in this big, beautiful pond and enjoy the bullfrogs at night.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to tell your story. That was great.
You're welcome. You're welcome. There's so much more, but that's some of it.
This is Sarah Reith with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We just heard from Renee Vineyard. You can catch short excerpts of this program during the news hour on Thursdays and half-hour episodes at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, Story Center, and the Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.